So today I will be reading the passage for today, which is from Ecclesiastes chapter 5, verses 8 to 20. If you see in a province the oppression of the poor and the violation of justice and right, do not be amazed at the matter. For the high official is watched by a higher, and there are yet higher ones over them. But all things considered, this is an advantage for a land, a king for a plowed field. The lover of money will not be satisfied with money, nor the lover of wealth with gain. This also is vanity. When goods increase, those who eat them increase. And what gain has their owner but to see them with his eyes? Sweet is the sleep of laborers, whether they eat little or much, but the surfeit of the rich will not let them sleep. There is a grievous ill that I have seen under the sun. Riches were kept by their owners to their hurt, and those riches were lost in a bad venture. Though they are parents of children, they have nothing in their hands. As they came from their mother's womb, so they shall go again. Naked as they came, they shall take nothing for their toil, which they may carry away with their hands. This also is a grievous ill. Just as they came, so shall they go, and what gain do they have from toiling for the wind? Besides all their days, they eat in darkness, in much vexation and sickness and resentment. This is what I have seen to be good. It is fitting to eat and drink and find enjoyment in all the toil with which one toils under the sun the few days of the life God gives us, for this is our lot. Likewise, all to whom God gives wealth and possessions and whom he enables to enjoy them and to accept their lot and find enjoyment in their toil, this is the gift of God. For they will scarcely brood over the days of their lives because God keeps them occupied with the joy of their hearts.
Ecclesiastes 5, we've noted that we have this contrast that's ongoing. Under the sun is a word that's repeated, this phrase, numerous times, 12, 15 times in the book. And it means living under the sun as a metaphor for a system where there's no reference to God. So living under the sun is this concept, that we have a closed system, we live out our lives, but we're not relating to God as such. And then there is under the hand of God, or sometimes called under heaven, where we are open to God and we are living our lives in relationship to him. And of course, that's where the writer, the teacher, the preacher coalesce, is encouraging us to go. I won't reread these verses because we've just read them, but we have a contrast then, really, of under the sun as it relates to attitudes towards money at the beginning, under the sun, and then it does the very same thing, but under the hand of God. So the passage flows fairly easily. So under the sun, as it relates to our attitudes towards money, Solomon, who's credited, who had much wealth, he is the one who at least initially leads us forward on this. So verses 8 and 9, self-centered bureaucracy, has a bit of a cynical view towards government, which you may relate to or not, but government, they are taking care of themselves, and there's one ruler who's taking care of himself, and then there's a ruler over him or her, and there's finally another ruler, and so on. It's an oppressive system. So this goes back to what we were looking at last week, where under the sun, people are looking out for themselves, and there is essentially this model of oppression. So it begins with that in verses 8 and 9, mimicking what we looked at last week. Secondly, and which is new, is that money and gain will not satisfy. So you notice the word gain, if you're looking at your Bibles, three times that word, which again is a theme throughout the entire book, it's repeated. So gain, profit, advantage, if we are looking at that in itself, that will not satisfy. Indeed, it suggests it creates anxiety. Interesting, this past week, if you followed the stock markets at all, there was a bit of a bumpy ride. In fact, more than that, there was quite a drop-off. And I'm sure there was lots of anxiety going around. How far is this going to go? Is this going to be like 2008? It creates a lot of anxiety, and that's what the writer is saying. Gain profit in itself is futile. It's like breath. Remember that word, vanity is breath. It's here and it's gone. So if we focus our whole lives on that in itself, it's unsatisfying. As I was thinking about that, I was thinking of The Hobbit, for some reason, and Smaug. Do you remember Smaug, the great dragon in The Hobbit, who lives in the caverns, and he's just rolling over all the money that he has, this vast fortune, and there he is. He's not particularly a happy dragon, but he's got all this money, Smaug. And then not only Smaug, you have one of the princes who are leading the way to destroy evil, Thorin, becomes quite enthralled with the treasure, and he becomes blind in terms of just wanting it. He just sees that it's his own, it's his right, Thorin. So the money does not satisfy either the dragon Smaug or Thorin. Finally, he comes to his senses and realizes that the money in itself will not be what it's made out to be. So unsatisfying. There is a grievous ill that I have seen under the sun. Riches were kept by their owners to have to their hurt. Quite insightful. And those riches were lost in a bad venture. Though they are parents of children, they have nothing in their hands as they came from their mother's womb. So they shall go again naked as they came. They shall take nothing for their toil, which they may carry away with their hands. This also is a grievous ill. Just as they came, so shall they go. And what gain, there's the word, do they have from toiling for the wind? Besides all their days, they eat in darkness, in much vexation and sickness and resentment. See that last verse. The earlier piece strikes me, verse 13. Riches were kept by their owners for their own hurt. So we have, and people in our world have lots of money. Some people, tons and tons of money. The writer of here, this writer, says that if it's only for themselves, it actually is hurtful. It wounds them because the riches are transient. They get locked up in themselves in that, and it doesn't actually help them as humans. They stop growing because you can just do whatever you want with your money. So riches can very easily, as we say here, become an idol. And this is one of the needs that we need to be aware of, is that money can become that, which leads to vexation and sickness and resentment. So money, which the Old Testament called mammon. Be aware, be careful in terms of our view towards mammon or money, which kind of links with the market. You see that? Money, mammon, market. So what are our views? What are our attitudes towards all of this? If it's under the sun, it can become a real issue for us. Idols. It's interesting, Paul, when he writes in Ephesians 5, he talks about the unfruitfulness of taking care of yourself, of just looking after yourself. He calls of evil, but the unfruitfulness of evil. That evil might be fun. Evil might be satisfying in some ways in the moment, but ultimately it's unfruitful. And so this is what the writer is saying here. So we have these characteristics of money in terms of life under the sun. It can easily become an idol, and I think in our world, money is definitely a god. We make money into a god all around the planet. So if we have it, that's the great longing in Canada, all the lotteries. If we win the max, we're going to have $50 million. I mean, obviously, millions and millions of people are wanting this, so successful. And countries all around the world are now having lotteries for this reason. So life under the sun, money under the sun, it's a caution. This is what I have seen to be good. This sets us up for the second half. It is fitting to eat and drink and find enjoyment in the toil with which one toils under the sun, the few days of the life God gives us, for this is our lot. Likewise, all to whom God gives wealth and possessions and whom he enables to enjoy them and to accept their lot and find enjoyment in their toil, this is the gift of God. For they will scarcely brood over the days of their lives because God keeps them occupied, note, with the joy of their hearts. So this unit, the second bit, is quite a contrast with what we saw before. So if we had, you know, more time, you could kind of drain that first bit, but you can see how it's not a very happy perspective in terms of money. It's not satisfying. It wounds you. It hurts you. But here we have the attitude under the hands of God, then, what it's about. One, we are called to enjoy God's gifts. So verses 18 to 20, this last bit, is really the crux. You note the repetition of the word God, Elohim, four times. So God is now the center of this unit. Before, it's under the sun. God's name is not mentioned in that whole unit. But now we're under the hand of God. God is the center, so enjoy the simple pleasures of life. And when they use the word eating and drinking, that is symbolic for one's whole life of rest and trust in God. It's just an example. It's not saying eating and drinking is everything, but it's an example of living in trust with God, companionship, life with God and life with others. Enjoy those good gifts. God is the center. It's not saying money's bad. It's saying enjoy this life under God and what God gives us. So, but two, enjoy and don't hoard. Big New Testament principle. Wealth is for enjoying, but not hoarding. So we see that in verse 19. So it's the last few verses that are so critical. Likewise, verse 19, all to whom God gives wealth and possessions and whom he enables to enjoy them, that's the word good, and to accept their lot and find enjoyment, good, in their toil, this is the gift of God. So this is not an excuse, as we say, for the prosperity gospel that just bless, 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 get lots of money, billions of dollars, whatever it is, as a sign of God's blessing. That's not the point. The point here is as God gives us gifts, we're to receive them and enjoy them from his hand, but we are always to be aware in terms of what that impact is on us and how it's shaping us. So enjoy, don't hoard. We'll come back to that. New Testament, what does Timothy say? Paul says to Timothy, of course, there is great gain in godliness combined with contentment. Note the word gain, great gain in godliness combined with contentment, for we brought nothing into the world so that we can take nothing out of it. But if we have food and clothing, we will be content with those. Note, but those who want to be rich fall into temptation and are trapped by many senseless and harmful desires that plunge people into ruin and destruction. For the love of money is a root, note, not the root, is a root of all kinds of evil. The love of money. And in their eagerness to be rich, some have wandered away from the faith and pierced themselves with many pains. So Paul is writing this as an elder. This is one of the pastorals are the books that come from Paul's hands when he is very elderly. So he's looking back on life, and this is his comments on wealth. We read a few verses longer later. I don't have them on screen, but listen to what he says. As for those who in the present age are rich, command them not to be haughty or to set their hopes on the uncertainty of riches, but rather on God, note, who richly provides us with everything for our enjoyment. They are to do good, to be rich in good works, generous and ready to share, thus storing up for themselves the treasure of a good foundation for the future, so that they may take hold of the life that really is life. So Paul is not berating wealth. But he's just saying, If that is the case, then use it in a way that is honoring for God and not hoarding. You said, not just taking care of yourself. It leads to the joy of their hearts. The central belief is God is the joy of our hearts, verse 20. Not the things we have, not the stuff we brood over, but God. We're in relationship with Him. He is the one we're looking for, and He gives us joy, and He gives us blessings, so we receive them from His hand. So there's a contrast between under the sun, where we only live for wealth. It hurts, it wounds, it's not satisfying. It's like Smaug and his treasure. But under the hand of God, we can receive it, enjoy it, but not hoard it, and help others as we go. This is what the writer of Ecclesiastes is saying. John writes for us, "Do not love the world or the things in the world. The love of the Father is not in those who love the world and all that is in the world." Note, here's the specific. The desire of the flesh, the desire of the eyes, the pride in riches comes not from the Father but from the world. And the world and its desire are passing away. It's like breath. But those who do the will of God live forever. So you see, if you take the biblical reality, take those verses as if they are true. Let's just say they're true, all right? We all believe, but let's say that is the case. And you have millions of dollars, and you just live for yourself, but at the end, boom, you're gone, just like breath. It's like grass that comes and is gone. If that is indeed the case, as the Bible says, contrasted with people who have life, 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 life forever, then is it a good contrast or is it a good sell? You see what I mean? The Faustian myth, sell your soul for the benefits of now. We would all say, if we saw that clearly on a weight, honest weights, we would say, no, obviously go for life. You wouldn't sell your soul and eternity with God and blessings and shalom for even 100 years, even 1,000 years. The writer of Ecclesiastes says 2,000 years in chapter 6. The unit really goes to 12, 6:12. We're not looking at the whole unit. Even for 2,000 years would we do it? The biblical scene is no, you would not do it. But obviously there's an attraction to the Faustian myth or it would not have been read and it wouldn't keep being read. People are attracted to the immediacy and say, well, maybe indeed I will do that. And you sell your life. So I think these words from the preacher, teacher, Koheleth is his name in the Hebrew, continue to speak. So what does that mean going forward? One, it's not about keeping wealth, but about keeping our neighbor. So that's the first thing we're supposed to do. We are to keep our neighbor. Rob was telling me before the service, he was down seeing his kids in Prince Edward County. Spent several days with them. Came all the way back Saturday to be at the Out of the Cold program at Blythewood for Saturday night. Every Saturday night, as he's able, to take care of these folks in terms of who don't have shelter. It's a city program. And then they come and they have meals and they have a place to stay all night. I'm thinking like, wow, good for you, man. Good for you. Out of the cold. I mean, that's not just keeping wealth, you see, it's keeping our neighbor. And of course, that's what we want to do as a church as well. Not just keep wealth. We have very little wealth. But we want to keep our neighbor. Number one. Two, enjoy God's gifts. Enjoy them. Yes, enjoy them. But from the writer, it's not the same as contented consumption. And the word actually is consumption. The word eat, akel, is the same word for consume. So depending on the context, it can mean food or it can mean consume. Lots of Hebrew words like this. There aren't so many Hebrew words, so they double up a lot of meanings. So if you read food all the way through as consume, then the theme of consumption is part of what's going on in this unit. Consumption. So contented consumption, meaning I'm just looking after myself. I have my pile of cash and I'm looking after me. The writer doesn't understand that and doesn't support that in any way, because we need to keep our neighbor and not just keep ourselves. So a good biblical practice is the Sabbath. You remember all the countries around Israel in the Old Testament worked in flat time. Time was all the same, 7 days a week. Sunday, Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, Saturday, Sunday, Monday, all flat. Everyone just the same. The Israeli model, the biblical model, turns that on its head, and now it becomes a circle. Sunday, Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, you're working. And then Saturday, the biblical model, is an entire day off to rest, no work, and to enjoy God's presence. Completely different. They were the only country doing this. None of the others were presenting a Sabbath model. So for us who enjoy God's gifts, it's good. It's good that we come together today to worship God, talk about God, read the scriptures, and not just be consumed about our work, because we can very easily fall into that. I was reading a piece on life in South Korea. The Olympics are on Korea right now. Do you know that after Mexico, South Korea has the longest work week in the world? In the Western OCED countries, the 35 countries that are part of that, they work 70 hours a week, standard. 70 hours a week. Mexico, even more. By law, the work is, I think, 68 hours. That's what it said. What struck me in the article was that people are working so much. There's a prison established, and people pay to go to prison for the week because they sit in their cell. This is true. They sit in their cell, the food is given to them, and they just have quiet and peace and rest. It ends up being like $550, U.S. bucks, so they can have a week of quiet. And the guy says, you know where the real prison is? It's not in here, it's out there. That's the real prison. Our craziness, work, 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 if we give into that model, it isn't satisfying, it's not enriching, it hurts us. How long can you work those kinds of hours? And people work beyond that. Forever. Not very healthy. Enjoy God's gifts, but not to be consumed by things. Enjoy God's gifts. A caution. Here's a word from Jesus. It is hard to be wealthy. More specifically, Jesus said to his disciples, truly I tell you, it will be hard for a rich person to enter the kingdom of heaven. Interesting, right? He doesn't say it's impossible. He just says it is hard. Matthew 19. It is hard. But we have a society that wants to be rich, right? We want money. Jesus is saying, sure, Proverbs says, don't have too little that you become bitter. Don't have too much that you forget God, for sure. But Jesus is saying it is hard. Our society is not saying that, right? This is very countercultural. Our society is not saying it is hard to be wealthy. They would say it is good to be wealthy. You'll live the good life. Jesus is saying in terms of spiritual things, it's actually hard. Why? Because wealth becomes a spiritual, becomes an attachment, it becomes a block very, very easily. Note also, wealth does not equate with moral worth. We should put a big box around that because we'll hear in the news, as if you've got millions of dollars, that somehow you must be a good person. Your money means you are worth something. The biblical view of that is just, that's a big crock, man. Your bank account has nothing to do with your morality, but it's presented in the news frequently as if it is. So we need to unmask our idols, whatever they are, and money can very quickly become one of those. It is hard. We cannot gain advantage over God. He is the one who's ultimately in control, right? We are to accept our position before Him. But again, we try to gain. Let's look at the end of chapter 6. So this unit really goes from 6 to the end of 12. We're not dealing with all that. But the writer says, "For who knows what is good for mortals while they live the few days of their vain life, which they pass like a shadow?" Verse 12. Who knows what is good? That's the question. The answer is, "For who can tell them what will be after them under the sun?" Who knows? The implied answer is God knows. We don't know, but God knows. So we're invited to hear and to receive the wisdom of Ecclesiastes for us in a day and an age which is consumed with wealth and money and advantage. Ron pointed out to me the connections with Philippians, which I like, with the word gain. "Yet whatever gains I had, these I have come to regard as loss because of Christ. More than that, I regard everything as loss because of the surpassing value of knowing Christ Jesus my Lord. For his sake, I have suffered the loss of all things," Paul writes, "and I regard them as rubbish or garbage or crap in order that I may gain Christ." So this view is just reminding us, yes, receive the blessings from God. Receive them. Enjoy them. Beautiful. But do not hoard them. Use them in a way that's also helping one's neighbor, in our community, for example, wherever you're living. This is the invitation. Because our true gain is ultimately not in our money, is it? It's not in our money. Yesterday, I was at the service for Rosemary's dad, Sam and Rosemary. And he was only 61. Young man. In the casket, I tell you, he looked great. He looked like he was just going to pop up and be there. But of course, he's gone. But I was impressed with just like, wow, here is this young man, not an old man, who's lived his life, and here he is. And so it's a reminder that we can't take anything with me. That's what I'm thinking as I'm standing in front of Francis. Loved father, loved husband, loved family member. But we take nothing with us. That's just the reality, right? This is all true. This is all true. We take nothing, not one thing. Be mindful. Just be mindful of the truth. Be mindful of the truth. Not be blinded. I'm speaking for all of us, for me, Alan. Be mindful of the truth as you live your life. Because one day you won't take one of your guitars with you, Alan. Not one. You better start thinking about that whole room of 10 guitars you got. You ain't taking even one with you, man. So, Simon, I don't know if you want 10 guitars, but I mean, like, you know what I mean? I ain't bringing them. I have to start dispensing them to everybody, all right? But we can't do that. So we need to hear, to receive, know God, follow God. We're going to sing that song right now, "I Will Follow."